All right, ready to dive in. Today, we're going back to 1978 Houston.
Houston, yeah.
Specifically, Houston's first official Gay Pride Week.
Oh, wow.
And we're really going to zero in on this event called Town Meeting I.
Okay.
It took place on June 25th, 1978. We've got all the source material here.
Right.
And our mission, if you will, is to try to understand why this meeting was such a huge turning point for Houston's LGBTQ plus community.
I think what's so interesting about this is the climate leading up to it. You know, before Anita Bryant's protests against gay rights.
Right.
Houston's gay communities.
It was much more underground, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were largely operating out of the public eye. Right. And then those protests, even though they were against gay rights.
Right, exactly. It seems like it kind of had the opposite effect.
They had this unintended consequence of galvanizing people.
Right.
It created this real push.
Like, we need to organize.
Yeah, for collective action and a political voice.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And that really directly led to Town Meeting I.
Yeah.
Which was the brainchild of Ray Hill.
Okay.
And others. But this wasn't just like a social gathering.
Right.
It was a really focused effort. To get the community talking, like a community-wide conversation, and to really start to mobilize gay individuals into a real political force to advocate for their rights.
Okay.
And it was the Gay Political Caucus that organized this meeting, which is pretty remarkable because it's considered the first politically focused homosexual meeting in the U.S.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the scale of this thing is really remarkable. I mean, they had something like 4,000 people show up to the Astor Arena.
Yeah.
This made front page news.
Wow.
It was a big deal. They even had Ginny Puzo,
okay,
who was from the National Gay Task Force. She actually chaired the meeting.
Right.
So this brought some national recognition to it as well.
Sure.
But maybe even more importantly, the keynote speaker was Cissy Farenthold.
Oh, okay.
Who, for those who don't know, was a former Texas state representative.
Right.
She even ran for governor at one point.
Wow.
And she gave this really, really powerful speech where she really directly connected the fight for LGBTQ plus equality to the wider civil rights movement.
Right.
And really emphasized this idea that everyone's freedom.
Right. That it's all interconnected.
It's linked together. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now let's get down to the nitty gritty. Like, what were the main issues that they tackled during this meeting?
Yeah.
Well, they actually addressed 13 different propositions.
Wow.
Big things like job security.
Okay.
The problem of police targeting gay individuals, which was a huge issue at the time.
Yeah.
Access to health care. And a big one was this push to repeal Texas's sodomy laws.
Yeah. I mean, those were laws that literally criminalized certain intimate acts. Right.
Right.
And fostered this whole climate of fear.
It was a huge issue. And I think what's really remarkable is that town meeting, I really directly led to some important organizations being established that we still have today.
Okay.
Things like the Montrose Counseling Center.
Right.
And the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard.
Yeah.
These were really tangible outcomes of this meeting
that
provided much needed support and information to the community.
Sure.
And maybe most remarkable of all, they even had a resolution to form an alliance with transgender individuals, which shows this commitment to broader community solidarity even back then.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, what I find really fascinating is how the planning for the meeting itself really shows the community's growing activism.
Right.
They had this group called the Gay Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw this town meeting as like a proactive.
They were going on the offensive.
Yeah, like an offensive strategy.
Okay.
And they set up all these committees.
Oh, wow.
And workshops to prepare for it.
Okay.
And a lot of these were held at this bookstore called Wild and Stein.
Okay.
And the whole point of these was to have this really democratic process of identifying all the key issues and coming up with the resolutions.
Right.
And they even had, you know, registration fees.
Wow. So they were really organized.
Yeah. They even had workbooks that they were giving out that outlined the proposed resolutions and the procedures for the meeting. I mean, it really shows a high degree of organization.
Right.
And this is where things get even more interesting. You know, the Harris County Commissioner's Court.
Okay.
Initially, they were opposed to the meeting.
Right. Which, of course, brought even more attention to it, I'm sure.
Yeah, ironically, it gave it even more publicity.
Of course.
But the Houston Sports Association, they actually upheld the lease agreement for the Astro Arena.
Okay.
So it went ahead as planned.
Right. And it sounds like it got a ton of support from the gay community.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, all sorts of organizations and bars. They hosted these pre-meeting registration parties to really get people excited about it.
So then the big day arrives, June 25th, 1978.
Yep.
3,500 people show up to the Astro Arena.
Right.
That's still a lot of people, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And Farenthold gives this keynote speech
that
really resonates with the audience.
Yeah.
She draws these really powerful parallels with the civil rights struggles.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's really interesting is that they also brought up concerns about discrimination within the gay community.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. Against women, Black individuals, and Chicano individuals. And this really shows that there was this desire for internal accountability. You know, they were trying to address these issues head on.
Yeah.
And so they debated these resolutions on legal reform and community support.
Right.
And then Donald Imbinder, who was the publisher of Blue Boy magazine, closed out the meeting.
Okay.
And he really emphasized this idea that there's actually a lot of support for human rights.
Right.
Even among people who aren't part of the gay community.
Okay.
So looking back, how do we assess the impact of this meeting?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the organizers considered it a success because it really did kickstart a lot of political action.
Right.
But they also acknowledged that there were areas for improvement in future meetings, like how to manage the media better and how to clarify the resolutions so that they were, you know, more impactful.
Right.
But even though the attendance was a little bit lower than they had hoped for,
there's no doubt that this meeting created a sense of unity and laid the groundwork for future activism.
Absolutely.
And I think this controversy that erupted over some of the photographs taken at the meeting really highlights the risks that people were taking just by attending this event.
Yeah.
You know, they actually had to negotiate with this ad hoc committee for our right to privacy to try to make sure that the identities of the attendees were protected.
Right.
So, I mean, what's the big takeaway here? I mean, for me, town meeting, I was a huge, it was a huge turning point. It really marked a big step forward in the political organization and visibility of Houston's LGBTQ plus community.
Right.
It directly addressed these critical issues.
Right.
It fostered this much needed dialogue. Mm-hmm. And even though there was opposition from outside and even some challenges from within the community, there's no doubt that it really paved the way for future activism.
Absolutely.
So I'll leave you with this. Think about how this example of community-led action informs, you know, the things that we're doing today to try to fight for LGBTQ plus rights and address community needs.
Yeah.
What can we learn from the successes and challenges that they faced back then as we continue to work toward equality and justice?
That's a good question.
Something to think about.
Yeah.
That's your food for thought from this deep dive.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Until next time.